This is the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. In a few short days, it'll be July 4th, which means we'll be outside grilling because it's what you do. And while we'll be talking about barbecue, we're probably not going to be doing like the real authentic barbecue, slow smoked meats and stuff, because that's what the pros do. And a little while back, Andrew Knowlton, our deputy editor, when he was in Charleston for the Charleston Wine and Food Festival, met up with two icons, authorities of real barbecue, Wyatt Dixon from Picnic in Durham, North Carolina, and Sam Jones from Skylight Inn and Sam Jones Barbecue in Winterville, North Carolina. And they talked about sort of all things barbecue and how we sort of entered this new golden age of smoke in America. And then after that, for those of us who don't have quite 12 hours to sit by a smoker and smoke some brisket and some ribs, we're talking hot dogs and hamburgers and how to do them really, really well with BA's own Carla Lolly Music and Rick Martinez. All right, let's do this.
All right, so we're talking new school, kind of old school barbecue. I've got two pros in the house right now. Wyatt Dixon, co-owner of Picnic in Durham, North Carolina. Welcome.
Thank you.
And also Sam Jones, owner of, well, recently, your own kind of barbecue place in Greenville, North Carolina.
That's correct.
Called?
Bears My Name Only.
That's right. That's all it needs. Sam, you were literally born into the barbecue business. And Wyatt, you come from a little bit of a different background.
Yeah, absolutely.
But let's start with Sam. Like, for those people listening who don't know your background, did you have a choice in what you became?
I did. I was not an indentured servant or anything, although it felt that way. But my folks opened Skylight in 1947.
And that's in Aden, North Carolina?
Aden, North Carolina.
Okay.
Garden Spot of the South, if you hadn't been there. but they opened in 47.
That would be 1947, right?
1947.
Sometimes you have to clarify, you know.
Sorry about that. But and ever since then, it has been a family-owned and operated barbecue joint.
And just, you do pretty much one thing there.
Whole hog is what has made us who we are.
Okay. And what can you tell people what style, you know, what style you do, or is there a specific style?
It's a whole hog. Eastern style is probably what we would be stereotyped into, although we don't apply not a ton of anything to the meat
right
while it's being cooked or after it's prepped.
And Eastern style would mean
vinegar.
Vinegar,
correct.
You would, and that would be after you pull or chop it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And one of the things that I think is characteristic that when I first had your barbecue many years ago was, you know, I grew up in Atlanta having some of that pulled pork, but it didn't have a lot of the crispy skin in there. And that's one of your, one of your signature things.
That's a love it or hate it.
Really?
There's no middle ground.
Some people don't like it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But that's you either are extremely blown away by it, or it just sets your hair on fire to the point that you hate everything around you.
What's not to like about crispy, crunchy pigskin?
I don't know. I think it's proof that Jesus loves us, but that's just my personal opinion.
Wyatt, how are you how do you come down on
the skin question?
Yeah, the skin question.
I'm a fan of it. I'm not doing it at the moment just because I don't have room in the restaurant to chop it up and put it into the and mix it into the barbecue.
Okay.
But I'm definitely a fan of it. And I think the people who don't like it, a lot of the times when you get objections from folks, it's because their notion of what's traditional or right. what is North Carolina barbecue differs a little bit from yours. And it's so sacred in this state that people do. They'll get mad at you. I'm sure a few people have let Sam have it, and I've only been open a month, and I got people letting me have it. But I think you have to stick to your guns.
Yeah.
Do what you do, and ultimately people will respect you for it. And I mean, Sam is a walking embodiment of that.
No, I mean, we're surrounded by legend right now, you know.
We are.
But before we get into kind of authenticity and what's good barbecue and not good barbecue, why you come from a much different background. You are from Fayetteville, North Carolina?
I grew up in Fayetteville.
And you're the son of a judge and a senator?
A state senator.
State senator. I'm not a state senator, so.
Me neither. Yeah. Me neither.
But you gave up a career to kind of do the barbecue thing.
I did. When I was in law school, I guess this would be 5 years ago or so, I'd been living in New York, working for a big law firm up there, came back to North Carolina to go to law school and started cooking pigs again.
Uh-huh.
Except this time I discovered like pasture raised pigs, which I call like real pigs now. Ones that roll in the mud and root around and break down gates and run amok on the farm. That kind of pig. I cooked one for an event, and Andrea Rusing, who runs Lantern in Chapel Hill.
Of course, yeah.
Somehow heard about it and then asked me to cook another pig a few weeks later for their 10th anniversary. And I was a little bit shocked and then kind of crapped my pants, but agreed to do it. And it turned out to be one of the better like pigs I've ever cooked, and was kind of one of those two pigs for me were, I don't want to be cheesy, but an epiphany that said, wow, I didn't know it could be this good.
Uh-huh.
And since then I've only cooked pasture raised pigs, and like Sam, I only do whole hog.
Uh-huh.
I think that mixing everything in together always makes for a better product.
Uh-huh. And Sam, do you think, you know, having grown up doing it, can anybody make good barbecue?
I believe so.
What do you need?
You need a good product to start with.
Yeah.
And don't bastardize it.
Mm-hmm.
And meaning you don't have to do a ton of things to a pig or any meat, for that matter, to make it good.
Uh-huh.
You cook it like it ought to be cooked.
Uh-huh.
And let the meat be the meat. It doesn't have to be a particular sauce has to be on it, or it's all about the pig.
Right.
Yeah. Done right, it should stand on its own.
You should just be, yeah, eat it natural.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like I've you know, been doing this a while, tracking kind of what's going on around the country. And I feel like every year barbecue, you know, trends come and go, but barbecue seems like it's always there. And I don't know whether that's just because the dining scene is becoming more casual in the U.S. or there's more people doing it, but it seems like, what is it about barbecue that, no matter, you know, what trends come and go, barbecue kind of remains, you know?
Well, historically, it was a peasant food.
Right.
It was a cheap way to feed a bunch of people. And that's not the case anymore if barbecue's done right. It is not a cheap food.
Not at all.
And I'm getting pushed back at our new restaurant for that very thing, prices.
Prices. People expect if they order a pulled pork sandwich that it should cost $7 or whatever.
Huh. In my part of the world.
Seven be real nice.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is the tipping point in North Carolina with a pulled pork sandwich? Like, who do you think you are charging that much for a pulled? Is it $5 is getting up there?
Sam's probably at like $4.50 or something.
Skylight's at $4.50 and we're at $6.25.
And you're trying to rob people.
At the new restaurant with a side. And man, it's just like I'm pulling your wallet out of your pocket and tying your arms behind your back.
Well, anytime you want to come up to Brooklyn and sell me a $6.25 pulled pork sandwich, I'll take it.
The price grows up when you cross the river.
Yeah. How much do you charge for a pulled pork sandwich at Picnic?
With coleslaw and one side, I think we'll charge like $7.50 maybe.
Okay.
Don't quote me, though.
Okay.
But he's in a completely different market than we are. That's probably a fair price where you're at.
It's about fair, but I'm not making a lot of money. It would be a loss. It would be a loss leader for us. But you know, you have to do it. If I were in Raleigh, 30 miles away, I could probably charge another $2. No problem.
But you both mentioned authenticity and this notion that we romanticize. I mean, me as a Southerner, I romanticize it all the time. Like, I have a few memories, and I'm sure that place that I used to go to near Lake Oconee, you know, south of Atlanta, Georgia, was actually not that good, but right. I went when I was 7.
It was an experience.
Yeah, it was an experience. Do you think, I mean, is it fair to say that, you know, people say, oh, if it wasn't the good old days when barbecue was real and smoked and all that, but I would be willing to go out there. Obviously, I wasn't alive 50 years ago, but I would say there's probably more better barbecue these days than there was 30 years ago.
Well, I was going to say, I think it depends.
Yeah.
But something happened in the last 50 years with industrial hog farming that has changed barbecue, and probably not for the better.
Right.
And I think that when people start to see the difference, they'll have the same epiphany I had.
Well, everybody got scared of pork. at right. one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was just a, like they were eating anthrax or something.
Yeah,
like yeah they because were, they were, yeah, everybody it, was told that it pork was killing everybody.
Right, like they were just injecting fat.
Or right, and so everyone, for all practical purposes, knee-jerked pigs.
Right.
We've got to make them lean. We've got to make them lean, and they were making barbecue hard to produce.
Just right. because the product wasn't there exactly. to make it. Okay.
You've got to have, nobody likes to say this because it's 2016, but you got to have some fat
mm-hmm.
to make good food.
Right. I think people are coming around to that a little bit.
Right.
More.
Well, I mean, and yeah. so one guy told me that you should call it natural juices, not fat. But
I
mean,
like
if you
that.
Think my family grew up.
That makes
grew
me up, naturally juicy.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I grew up, my family, that we farmed. They had a restaurant. They had a racehorse farm. And every meal that my grandmother cooked, if there was greens on the table, it was seasoned with pork fat.
Yeah.
I mean, it made everything better. And so if you take that from the animal that you're making your main product with, yes, it makes a terrible difference in it.
Right. Do you think when your grandfather opened up, when he did it, open up Skylight, but did he even... He didn't even think about the ingredients probably because was he getting just, he knew where the ingredients were coming from back when he opened, or was he just getting...
In 1947, our family was broke as a freshly released convict.
Really?
And they lived from the farm. The restaurant was not self-sustaining at the time. And so when Skylight opened, my grandfather was 16 years old.
Wow.
And so imagine a 16-year-old kid running a restaurant.
At an now,
when I say a restaurant, I'm talking about a octagonal shaped cinder block building,
right?
That had a jukebox, from the stories I've been told, some kind of stuffed bear, and it was a party. Like I remember people just recently. I talked to a couple. This guy was telling me a story. I used to go out to your granddaddy's place in the 50s, and we could go parking behind the place back there, and his wife was sitting at the table when he was telling me the story, and I'm thinking, I don't believe I'd have told that, brother. And he said, yeah. He said, I went out there with this girl when we were teenagers, and we went parking, and he told me the story. And anyway, that was his wife. He met his wife at Skylight in the 50s parking.
I was going to say, I bet she already knew the story.
Yeah. And so,
turns
I mean,
out
it
she
was,
did.
He sold everything back then. It wasn't until the 60s. When they made the transition to only being a barbecue place.
Barbecue place, okay. Yeah. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about the evolution of barbecue and you know, we're all Southern kids here.
Gentlemen.
I'm still a kid.
Depends on who you ask. All right.
And, you know, when I moved to the North 20 years ago, I always thought, okay, well, there goes barbecue. I'm never going to have good barbecue. But I would say recently, and as I've traveled around the U.S., you can, in fact, get really good barbecue outside of the South. I don't know if you guys agree with me on that or not.
I do.
But when did this kind of, this regionalization of like, you know what, it doesn't, you know, you can go to Hometown Barbecue in Brooklyn. I don't know if either of y'all have been there.
I know Billy will.
Pretty solid stuff, you know? Or going to Podnas Pit in Portland, Oregon, like Rodney Muir, he does a really good job. Is it just more of that romanticism that we're talking about, that nostalgia that it can't? Or like, why do you think barbecue, you know, it has no boundaries, really?
The lines are a lot more blurred than they once were.
Yeah.
For instance, my grandfather was one of those, you know what, this is the way we cook barbecue, and if you don't cook it this way, you're going to hell, and there's nothing any preacher can do about it. And there were people that were of that sentiment. Those people, the age that you were talking about earlier,
right.
That generation of people, and there's some people still pretty passionate about it,
right?
That barbecue is a food defined by geography.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the people from that area where that food was born.
It's like, man, a sports team,
don't
right?
Freaking fist fight over
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's the people get passionate about it, and it can catch you off guard at times, like with the barbecue. I mean, people have been giving us hell on hush puppies for a couple of weeks, and it didn't...
Because a barbecue place shouldn't have hush puppies.
Well, it should have hush puppies, but the hush puppies have to be, like, exactly right, and I'm sure Sam will agree. Like, people are not shy about sharing their opinions. And everyone in North Carolina has an opinion on what North Carolina barbecue is and should be. And sometimes you align with their opinion and sometimes you don't. But I think that ultimately everybody appreciates it when you're trying to continue and better, you know, something that the state's pretty proud of and means a lot to people.
So do you guys roll your eyes when, if you were to go to Portland, Oregon, and you saw a sign for North Carolina style pit barbecue?
I wouldn't if it was being done correctly.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I'd be pumped about it if they were doing it right. If they were, you know, pulling it out of an oven, maybe not at all, but done right, anyone can do it. It's time and heat more and patience. And having the right temperament, basically. Yeah. That's what it takes.
There isn't an arrogant bone in my body at all, but I think that every style of barbecue, that there's people that do a really, really good job at it, and there's three times that amount doing a terrible job at mm-hmm. it.
So what about, how do you guys feel about alcohol, mixing alcohol, selling alcohol with barbecue?
I feel good about it.
Sam's head is shaking right now. Like
I am the son of a Baptist preacher. Skylight sold beer in the early days, and my grandfather stopped selling beer. It was in the late 50s because Skylight was a party joint back in the day.
Right.
Well, so fast forward to now, there's something about Eastern North Carolina that alcohol with barbecue is taboo. And I say that I lived in a very small...
Not from a religious thing, just it doesn't go together, no, they say?
It,
or?
What I'm saying is it goes together.
Okay.
If somebody's cooking a pig at a tailgate, they're going to be drinking beer.
Right.
However...
There are also going to be some Jesus people that show up.
That's right. And the people who are our parents' age do not dig, for most practical purposes, a restaurant in Eastern North Carolina selling beer. Huh. I say that having one. in the Greenville, North Carolina newspaper, the Daily Reflector has this section called Bless Your Heart.
Oh, you didn't get one of those, did you?
Man.
That's
FU. Correct. I was into Bless Your Heart.
Oh, Bless Your Heart, Sam. I'm sorry.
Every other day.
Wait, so this is a column that they...
This is a column where it could be used for good, like Bless Your Heart to the guy that...
Rescued
gave me
dog.
My extra dollar that I was short standing in line okay. at the grocery store.
Okay.
Or bless your heart to every other barbecue place in Eastern North Carolina for not selling beer.
Oh, wow.
Hint, hint, wink, wink, the new place, not going to call any names, Sam Jones Barbecue for selling beer.
You're going to hell for it.
Yeah, I had a lady in our drive-thru tell me that.
Straight up, you're going to hell?
Yes, sir.
Well,
and
yeah. Like I said, people are passionate about barbecue. Yeah.
Barbecue is serious
it
business.
Matters.
I don't think people outside of the South realize how ingrained and how important it is
it
to
really
people down
is.
Here. All right, I want to thank both of you guys, Sam Jones, owner of Sam Jones Barbecue in Greenville, North Carolina. And also thanks to Wyatt Dixon, co-owner of Picnic in Durham,
correct,
North Carolina. Before
correct.
I let you guys go, though, we have to do our lightning round.
Awesome.
So this is one, you just, I don't need any explanation, just give me an answer.
Got it.
Start with you, Wyatt. Sweet tea or lemonade or both?
Arnold Palmer.
Good answer.
Tea.
Tea. Sweet tea or unsweetened tea?
Tea is no good without sugar.
But how much sugar? That's because that's a whole nother. We have a whole nother show about that.
We could do a sweet tea.
Mostly sugar is what I've found people want. Like,
what I was
very little
to
tea
say is I'm talking about a diabetic emergency.
Right. Right. The people, they really, what they want to do is like freebase some sucrose.
Well, I stopped at the Chicken Coop in Charlotte, North Carolina one time, and my wife is not from the South. We picked up a jug of sweet tea. We were driving to New York and she started drinking it and literally spit it out in the car. She's like, this, they must have made a mistake. And I had it. And I was like,
you got
it's
just
not a mistake.
Syrup.
Yeah, it was. All right. Brunswick stew or hush puppies?
Stew.
Sam?
I'm a bread guy myself.
Hush puppies?
I mean, I like brunches too. It's okay. I'm going to be hush puppies.
Okay.
I might dip it in the stew.
There you go.
All right, Wyatt. Mac and cheese or potato salad?
I'm going to go potato salad.
Potato salad.
Yeah.
You're asking questions like, do you love your wife or your mother?
That's true.
Well, they're not easy. I know. That's why I'm asking them.
I'm a lover.
Who's listening?
Yeah. I'm a lover of mac and cheese.
A sandwich or just the meat?
I don't care as long as there's slaw with it. It doesn't matter. Yep. The bun on that sandwich is just a vehicle to get it to your mouth, and then it disappears anyway. So it doesn't. I don't really.
You don't care.
Distinguish much.
Sam?
A sandwich and slaw is not even an option.
Like, really?
No, God intended for a pork sandwich to have coleslaw on it.
Yes, he did.
It's in the Bible.
If you don't want it, you can scrape that shit off, but you're getting it.
Texas Pete or Crystal?
Pete, all the way. That's a North Carolina product.
Yeah. Why? Nah, I just bought Wyatt a drink. He don't even realize it.
T.W. Garner out of Winston-Salem.
Family-owned.
Yes, sir.
Home team. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Beer or bourbon? Got to choose one, not together.
It depends on the time of day, but probably beer.
I would go bourbon.
Bourbon. Let's go with cheer wine or Pepsi?
Cheer wine. I don't know who you asked, but...
Sam said cheer wine.
Yep.
My teeth are getting cavities. I guess if you're going to drink one of them, you drink cheer wine, but yeah, they're both a little too sweet for me.
All right, chopped or pulled?
Pulled all day.
I have to say chopped. That's or my
I kind of have.
If
to
my
say
dad
pulled.
Was listening to this and I didn't say chopped, it'd be like, "Hey, honey, how about get that wheel out of safe?
Right,
he's out.
How about Sam's not coming home? Right. From Charleston,
exactly.
All right, then one that has just because we always ask this question: butter or olive oil?
Butter.
Butter makes everything better.
They and have pork it. Fat.
Yes.
Yeah, pork fat. Pork fat or butter?
Both. That's not a fair question.
I'm telling you, it's like your wife or your mother. That's what you're choosing between.
All right, guys, thank you so much.
Absolutely, thank you.
I enjoyed it, yo.
A lot of fun.
Rick and Carla, I'm going to be kind of honest with you. I so rarely make burgers or dogs when I grill.
I almost always, when we do our block party, I do burgers and hot dogs.
I want to do them, but I'm always like feeling like, oh, I work at Bon Appetit. I need to make, you know, some crazy Asian spare ribs or like a spatchcock chicken or, you know, but it's like, oh, hot dogs and hamburgers. That's too simple.
Well, my dumb thing is like I've done a whole suckling pig, but the same day I also did hot dogs and hamburgers.
That's insane.
Some days you need a hamburger, a really good grilled hamburger. You know, you need to break up the spatchcock chicken and the whole pig on the fire.
Before I came to BA, I would do hot dogs and hamburgers, but you fancy pants guys pressure me into doing, you know, the fancy stuff.
But it makes the classic smash burger on the grill even better.
All right, so let's get down to business here because we'll start with burgers. You talked about smash burgers on the grill. Now, Carla and I think I came around last year to this whole thing where you take the cast iron skillet, put it on the grill over the coals, and then use that as like your shorter cook station, and you're doing like In and Out, Shake Shack style burgers where you smush them right in the pan, you put the American cheese on, it's sizzling in its own fat, and it's crispy, and it's just, oh my God.
This is what the pioneers did, right?
Really?
Yeah, covered wagon. They were like fully just sticking the cast iron right on the fire.
You're saying Shake Shack is like a pioneer thing?
I'm saying we think this is a new idea, but this is really like old-fashioned campfire stuff.
Just the notion of doing cast iron over like a over live fire.
Yeah, these grill grates are for like modern weaklings.
That's a good point because like people are always like, well, people are then like, well, is it really grilling? And I'm like, well, I mean, it's you're outside, you're with your friends, right. You got a drink, and so if you're using a skillet on top of a live fire grill or even a gas grill. Whether it's for dogs or burgers, or even you're making like throwing some vegetables in there, you know,
it's much, much hotter than most indoor home stoves are going to get. So your cast iron is getting like much hotter.
But better than that, you don't have to clean up all the splattered grease all over your kitchen. So, you know, you have a natural exhaust system. There's easy cleanup.
I think that's a huge part about grilling outside, and is that you don't have all, obviously, the smoke, the grease, all that sort of stuff. And I did a party last year, a going away party for friends in our backyard, and there's probably 25 people there. And I was like, all right, I'm on burger duty. And that's the thing. If you're the person manning the grill, you're working at a party. Unless unless you do it all ahead of time, which is another thing we're talking about on another podcast. But I was there, and I was like doing the smash burgers. I took the borrowed this like 17-inch cast iron skillet from work.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that since, actually. Yeah. Weirdly.
I might still
we had
have
to get
it.
Another one.
Oh, really?
We did.
Do I still have it?
Yeah, you do.
You sure?
That's my favorite cast iron skillet.
Honestly don't know where it is. I was thinking about it the other day. I'm like, do I still have that skillet? But so anyway, and I'm smashing them in there, and I got all like the American cheese, which kind of gets that sort of like when it's sitting on a table on a warm summer night, it's not quite melted on its own, but it just gets that weird limp sort of like gooey. And you're like peeling that off, putting it on there, and it's sizzling. And, you know, people are just freaking out. They're like, oh, my God, this is the best burger ever. How did you do it? And I'm like, well, you put a little salt and pepper on it. You smash it in a skillet, and it's basically frying in its own fat until it's crispy on one side. You flip it over. You put the cheese on there, and it's done really quickly.
Yeah.
And then I don't want to jump ahead to hot dogs. But because Emil Stonick, our colleague here, he's like, oh, if you throw a few dogs on, no one will complain. Someone's always going to eat a hot dog.
For sure.
Yeah. So I was then taking the hot dogs and throwing them in the pan, basically frying up in the beef fat.
Why not?
And that I was like, holy cow. And then you take the little bun and you crisp them up in that fat. Mm. Oh, my God.
That's a multi-purpose griddle situation.
So I don't know. It was pretty easy, and like I said, it is nice that you don't get the splatter. You don't have to have a hood. You just kind of roll with it on the outside.
The other thing that happens too afterwards is you've completely seasoned your griddle as a result, because the grill is much hotter than if you'd had it on the stove. And then if you're cooking smash burgers on the grill, let's be honest, you're probably making 20.
Right.
You know. So after all of that, you wipe down your griddle and it's completely seasoned, better than you'd ever be able to get it inside.
Interesting point. Bonus. All right. Well, Carl, let me ask you a question. So let's say you're doing burgers on the grill without a cast iron. Thoughts on how you make them, how you grill them? Any opinions?
My opinion is that a good burger has a high percentage of fat. And as we know, when fat liquefies over the heat and drips onto the coals, it causes a fire.
And your definition of a good percentage being?
Oh, at least 20%.
At least 20%. Yeah. So, kids, when you go to the grocery store and you see 85% lean, don't buy that.
It's really 85. You can kind of get away with it, especially with some, you know, mayo, maybe some bacon on your burger.
Fixins.
Yeah, some fixins.
But you want
that 90% lean. Rick
just blanched. Yeah, you want a 20%. Tell me, might even say 25%.
I know. I've done it. And I mean, they'll shrink a lot, but they'll be delicious. So the thing that I like to do is actually bank the coals. I used to always do 2/3 of the grill being over indirect heat and 1/3 being hot. But Rick turned me on to the perimeter indirect heat, which is really cool because then you do get that.
Wait, so you do the coals
the
in
hot
the middle?
Coals, no, the hot coals are going around the outside edge of the grill. So you push them to the outer edge.
It's a ring of fire.
A briquette donut is a great way of thinking about it.
So there's a circle of safety on the inside of the grill grate?
So you have heat. You have heat basically surrounding your food. It's great for chickens also.
Yeah.
So instead of, if you put the chicken in the center and you have a ring of fire around it, you're cooking all sides.
Yeah,
but if you're doing a steak, you want direct heat.
If you want a steak,
So if you're doing a burger, Rick, because I'm really confused now. How are you grilling burger over coals? Where are the coals?
So when I do the burger on a Weber, I have the entire surface is one layer of coal. Because I like to grill mine on hot because I like it rare, medium, rare. So I want something that's really hot that's going to sear it. You won't get that much fat dripping out and causing the flare-ups.
Because it's not hanging out for that long.
It's not hanging out for that long. So it's literally going to be 2 minutes per side, really super hot, probably about 750, 800 degrees.
So you're saying we can ignore the whole donut of briquettes?
Well, that's Rick.
Well, Rick just said, Rick was the one who said, Ted, to do the briquette donut.
That's what I do for my burgers.
Right. Oh, my God. All right. Okay. Oh, my God. My head's hurting. All right. So, okay. But hold on. Before we get to the coals or the gas grill and how high you turn it on, the burger itself, and I think we're on the same page here. You buy good ground chuck, for instance, with 20% fat. I do a very loosely packed burger, just enough to keep it together so it's not dense and too hard. About a third of a pound, maybe?
Oh, six ounces. Do a 4 ounce burger, but whatever. Oh,
yeah, 4 to 6 ounces. Yeah. Salt on the outside.
Salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper on the outside, not on the inside.
Never.
Just, yeah, because that sort of takes the moisture out and turns into sausage, kind of, I was told one time, which makes sense. You don't want to salt it beforehand and let it sit.
We're not making meatballs.
No. And then you lay it on the grill and do not press down. Rick, don't press down.
I never press down.
Because that's also where all the juice goes and also causes a flare-up. Fixins. Let's talk fixins. Oh, cheese. First of all, cheese.
American,
yes. Do we have a consensus here, Carla?
When I do cookouts, I do American.
Yeah. I mean, I would do cheddar. I don't have a problem with cheddar. I think, no disrespect to April Bloomfield, but I think like blue cheese on a burger is disgusting.
I wouldn't do that.
No.
And I don't like, otherwise, and also, then you start getting like Munster or whatever, or Swiss. Swiss is, I don't believe in Swiss.
No, I don't believe in Swiss in general.
Next thing you know, you're the person who's using the English muffin.
The only other one I would do is cheddar also.
Yeah.
And I mean, and also obviously what's nice about American cheese besides its weird liquidy cheesiness is it melts really quickly.
Yeah.
It doesn't even really melt. It like softens.
It just droops.
That's its thing.
It's like that character in, it's like the evil Terminator in Terminator 2 who turns into liquid and like his finger goes through your eye. He's like, he's made out of like liquid mercury or whatever.
That's
like,
American cheese.
Yeah, American cheese is like the liquid mercury of cheese.
I like to get the cheddar though from the deli where they slice it and it looks.
Slice it thin. Well, it's also really nice if you get it sliced thin, which is nice. I love that. I mean, like, give me 20 slices of thinly sliced cheddar. That would do that. Okay, so we got that happening. Fixins.
Lettuce and tomato, especially in the summertime. The thing that I love about grilling burgers outside is that I know that there's an heirloom tomato that is, it's going to be cut. It's going to be really delicious. Salt it right before it goes on the burger. Lots of mayo and the melted American cheese. And that's kind
of. You mentioned lettuce though.
Iceberg.
If you're going to do it.
If you're going to do it.
Will you shred it or do you like just. Into leaves.
I just do the leaves. I kind of don't have time to, you know. That's
shredding. That'll take at least 26 seconds.
Well, I'm manning the grill cooking 20 burgers for a bunch of hungry people. They can like rip their own leaves off.
But shredding lettuce for a burger, I think, defeats the purpose. Like, I love shredded lettuce on a hero. I kind of love shredded lettuce a lot in sandwiches, but not on a burger because it just will wilt right away. I like it the way they do it.
But if it's iceberg, it won't wilt. It'll stand up to the heat a little bit better.
But with the shredding, I don't know. It's too much surface area. It's going to steam. It's going to get limp. I like it the way they do it at Pine Burger in Pasadena, California. It's like several slices of the iceberg.
Oh, where it's almost like, it's like a wedge. It's like a wedge salmon.
Yeah, because I'm after the crunch. And the tomato, I love tomatoes, but take it or leave it on my burger.
Really?
I want American cheese. I want the lettuce. I want mayonnaise. And hot sauce. That is what I want. Sauce.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm with Rick on this one. I would do that nice heirloom tomato, like a nice thick one. I would do American cheeseburger, medium rare. I love mayonnaise. I would put it on both sides, and that's it. I don't even need the lettuce. Because I mean, lettuce, I guess it gives you texture, which is nice.
I love for the cold and the hot contrast and for the crunch. And also a pickle, some sliced pickles. Delicious.
All right. So that's burger talk. On the cover of our July issue of Bon Appetit magazine on newsstands now, we got all sorts of hot dogs with all sorts of crazy toppings. Let's start at the bottom, though. First with the hot dog before you get all creative with the toppings.
Yeah. We were eating a lot of different kinds of dogs and decided to do a formal test kitchen hot dog tasting, blind tasting, which is the only way to really judge anything.
This is your job? You do this for a living?
This is part of my job.
You guys get paid to just sit around and eat hot dogs?
It was actually hard. There were 9 brands.
Do I need to go back and talk about the clam juice taste test?
Because
I also had to do that one.
All right. So who fared well on the all beef hot dog tasting?
So it's funny because, as I suspected, it was a very American brand, Boar's Head beef frankfurters with the natural casing. They have a bunch of different types, but that was the winner. And it doesn't surprise me at all because hot dogs are one of those very nostalgic things.
Yes.
And the brands that you tend to gravitate to are the ones who have been around forever, who like deliver that kind of straightforward, what you expect deliciousness. But the snap is really important and the beefy flavor is really important.
Any other brands that did well?
So I actually differed from the group. Hebrew National was actually my favorite.
Ah, old school.
Nice. It had a really nice snap to it. But the thing that I, apart from the flavor, the thing that I really liked about it is the texture. Some of the hot dogs we tried were really almost spongy and really unpleasant.
Oh, yeah, that's weird.
Hebrew National seemed to me to have a really good plump interior coupled with the snap. To me, it made me think it would grill really well. Yeah. And still retain a lot of the moisture.
All right, two questions. First of all, am I wrong in thinking that there's some hot dogs that don't have casing? Do I see this at like sometimes in stores? Like
you're probably talking about uncured, like the ones that are nitrate free.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Like the all American beef organic hot dog. Yeah, those have really good flavor, but they don't have the same. It's all about the casing.
All right. So then, grilling a hot dog, you kind of can't screw it up, right? They're already cooked.
Well, you can, yeah, you actually. Can.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Hey, what do I know?
Overcooking?
That's overcooking and cooking over too hot of a heat because really? They will burst.
Oh, they go too fast,
they split, and then you lose all your juices.
Sometimes they'll kind of explode if you drop them on a really super hot
grill. So how long do I, is it, I mean, I don't know, what am I, is it 5 minutes over medium heat or?
Yeah, four to five.
Yeah, use your eyes.
Medium high.
Just keep rolling them around.
Yeah.
You don't want to leave them too long on one side because they'll char up pretty quickly.
Yeah,
and then they dry out and get all wrinkly.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right, and toast the buns, of course.
Yeah,
of course. All right. So what's fun about this cover is we got all sorts of kind of cool, kooky, creative toppings going on here. What's your favorite of this batch, Carla?
I really like the banh mi one that has the pickled carrots and the herbs on them. Probably was my favorite.
This was a peanut satay sauce, so kind of like a sweet peanut sauce.
Yeah, sweet with a little spice.
And then you have some pickled carrots, thinly sliced red chili, cilantro, crushed peanuts. Ooh, the peanut sounds nice.
I think, you know, all of these dogs have a few things in common. They all have something kind of creamy. They all have a crunchy thing. They all have a fresh thing, whether it was herbs or the shishito peppers or whatever. And that combination of cooling and creamy...
And it's really nice because that also because hot dogs are so kind of salty and concentrated in flavor that they stand up well to really sort of brightly flavored sort of things.
Something acidic is really key, I think. Yeah.
And Rick, what about you of the Dirty Dozen here?
I really like that one as well, the banh mi dog. I think that was probably my favorite. The elote dog was also really good and kind of surprising when Claire originally told me her idea for it. I was like, I'm not sure what I think about corn and hot dog.
And elote, a riff on the Mexican grilled corn.
Right. Idea. But it was really, really good. And it was pretty spicy. I was into it.
I think I know what Adam's favorite was.
Well, yeah. And you've mocked me for this before. I love it. First of all, not only did you mock me, you vetoed me of even including what I wanted to include in this story.
I got other people to weigh in.
So if you think this is some all-powerful dictatorship here at Bon Appetit, you're only right 60% of the time. So I wanted to do my favorite is a slaw dog. I like to make like a nice creamy slaw. Homemade with some celery seed and then avocado, nice ripe avocado slices. So I have avocado on one side of the dog, slaw on the other, and then a little Dijon or French's mustard, not French's, I like the Goldens, like the brown mustard down the middle. And you said you found the avocado as what, Carla?
Well, the warm fattiness next to the already fatty hot dog was just, I mean, we did, in fairness, we did put it up for tasting and several people had it and several people rejected it. So, but I would put avocado on my hamburger.
Yeah, you put it in your burger. So that doesn't make sense. Rick, back me up here. Come on. Help a brother out.
I mean, I love avocado. You know that. But you lost all the flavor of the slaw. Like it just masked all the flavor. It just felt very muted. And then it was another squishy element with the bun.
But we did bring a slaw dog into the story and we just paired it up with the incredibly spicy, acidic, fantastic sport pepper.
Yeah, and this one, the ranch dog, which has a great name. So this one is ranch dressing, which
everyone
loves ranch dressing. Crushed up potato chips. Mm. That's awesome. Creamy ranch slaw. Wait, so we have ranch dressing and ranch slaw?
It's the same dressing, but it just goes...
Different parts of the dog.
Double duty.
Pickled hot peppers and then chopped chives. Yeah. Chives are underrated.
They are.
Oh, totally.
Love a chive.
Yeah.
You know, because like sometimes you don't want like chopped, like the chopped raw onion might be too much, but the chopped chives like suggests that sort of allium vibe without going full on.
Yeah, as someone who cannot eat raw onion, I completely concur.
All right, anything else we need to know about hot dogs?
I mean, you're going to have more than one.
Oh, wait, two things. Yes, you should always plan for more than one. Two things we did on this story, which I like from a visual effect, certainly. We did the slash dog, where we kind of made little slashes in it, almost like you were making homemade bread with a boule loaf. You do the slashes on top. Can we talk about the slashes, Carla?
Sure. That was cool. We actually started out, and I should give credit to Claire Saffitz, who went, you know, really crazy with hot dogs for several days in a row. But we started out wanting to do the spiral cut hot dog, which turns out to be more annoying than you think, because you have to put a skewer straight through the middle of the hot dog and then take a knife and go all the way around.
Yeah, so the spiral, so the cut continues.
It's kind of like a, you know, like a curly fry, and you can't cut all the way through.
Ooh, curly
or else
fries.
Yeah.
Mm.
And we did. She
What's
did
better,
it.
Curly fries or waffle fries?
Oh, it's hard.
Curly. No,
I think waffles
fry up crispier.
I agree.
You don't get soggy curly fries.
The
you get a
curly fries
of
sticks together too much, and you don't get the surface
you're not
area.
Frying them right. You have to have a deep fat.
Well,
fry.
You're not. Who's you're ordering them from somewhere?
Well, send them back.
Send them back.
Okay.
No, but yeah, so
it's she
like
did
insurance.
The spiral dog a couple times. This is a highly skilled person. She could do whatever, and she was like, "That's it's really annoying. I would never do it again." But it was all
internet things.
Yeah, it's one of those internet things, and it's what we realized is just all about the surface area, right? Creating more cuts for more browning, more little edges.
Yeah.
And she got the same effect just by going straight down and
on one side.
On one side.
Yeah.
Big deal. Fine. And then it gets heat gets in there and
yeah, you get these little crevices and they're crispy and that's an easy, quick thing to do, which sort of ups the delish factor. But now we also have the bacon wrap dogs.
Oh. So,
so talk to me about that technique, because there is some technique involved in this, right?
A little
right?
bit.
You partially cook the bacon before you yeah, because it won't fully cook if you wrap the raw bacon around the dog. So you have to partially cook it, then wrap it. And I believe they were toothpicked into the dog to hold it on, and then just griddled after
just
that.
Just remember to take the toothpicks
out
when you're done.
Once they're done, you can take the picks out and they stick together.
And so you got to like sort of par cook the bacon so it starts to cook but still is pliable. It's not.
But they're highly addictive. I mean, she was literally having to chase the other editors away from her dogs or she would have never had a tasting.
I think we were all like the only thing that makes a delicious, salty meat product more delicious is wrapping it in
more salty
meat product.
Well, Carla and Rick, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Always fun.
So hungry now.
This podcast has been brought to you by Belle Cushing and Carrie Polis, with editing by Mitra Kaboli and additional help from Christina Che and Lily Sherman. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Greedies. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us anything about this or any episode, please email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com.